This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras, just a track and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high-fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutritious, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com.
We are going to the doctor's office. We are going to learn some stuff. I get a lot of questions, and Lord knows I don't know the answer because I'm definitely not a vet. But we are very fortunate in our group that we hunt with that a vet actually hunts with us. And we've got med kits made up. Man, we could probably do surgery right there on the tailgate if we needed to because he gets us, he puts us in the know. But we are very fortunate. We have a vet that hunts with us when he can. And he keeps our dogs taken care of and take care of our dogs even when he's not at work, and we bring them to his house and work on them out here on the porch. And but today I am with Garrett Bailey, and Garrett is with us, and we're going to talk about females being pregnant, what to do with the females. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, and then when the pups are born, we're going to talk about just some of the stuff on the vet side of it, what we should do to be taking care of them to give them the most chance for growth and healthy and a healthy lifestyle. So, Garrett, I really appreciate you having me over this evening. I think, man, you're going to turn some we're going to turn some dogs loose here in a little bit, aren't we?
You're dang right. We're going to run something, even if it's wrong.
Well, that's probably what it's going to be with these three heathens I brought.
It'll buff out.
But, Garrett, tell us, kind of give us your background. I mean, I know listeners don't know. Tell us your background. Where are you from? How you got into being a vet, and then we'll just run it from there.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I'm originally from Greenbrier County, West Virginia.
Oh.
Yeah. West by God. Not the Virginia. Best Virginia.
I know. We got to talk about this song, John Denver.
Yeah.
Country Roads.
You dang right.
It says West Virginia. It was wrote about the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was not wrote about the steep goat pass that y'all have over there.
No.
Yes.
Definitely not. This is not true. What year was that wrote?
I don't know, but I'm tired of hearing it every time West Virginia wins a ball game.
Hey, I love it. I get up singing it every morning.
All right, so you're from Greenbrier.
Yep, grew up in Greenbrier County. You know, mom and dad, good, great family. Grew up hunting was, I mean, it was it. Mm-hmm. I grew up loving eat, sleep, and breathe hunting. I didn't grow up with hounds. I was always around hounds. My uncle had hounds. We run some beagles. Went coon hunting and bear hunting with friends. And I've gotten to hounds later, which I'll get into a second here. I always wanted to be a vet and graduated from WVU and decided that maybe vet school wasn't the right path looking at student debt load and all those mm-hmm. things, and went and took a year off and went and worked in Montana and lived out in Montana for a year, and then applied to vet school and ended up getting some interviews at Mississippi State and Auburn.
Oh.
And almost didn't get any interviews because I put hunting and trapping under my hobbies and interests. And actually they called all my references about that.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't even, they weren't going to take me to get an interview, or I wasn't going to get an interview at Mississippi State, which is where I went and graduated, because of the trapping.
Wow.
But, yeah. So, anyway, I ended up getting into Mississippi State. I went there for 4 years and met my wife, and we started having youngins shortly after we got out of vet school, and practiced in Campbellsville, Kentucky for a couple years. With a guy down there, great mentor, great first job, just a little too far from home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's from Mississippi, so it was a good midpoint, but we decided to come back and get a little bit closer to home. So
I got you.
Been here for...
So Katie's from Mississippi?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yep, she's from Mississippi, Southern Belle.
Uh-huh. So what's her favorite football team?
Mississippi? She likes Mississippi State.
State, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She went to undergrad there and everything, so.
I got you.
And then, you know, we've been here now, I guess going on 5 years.
Well, I was going to say, I was trying to think about it on the ride over here. You know, kind of when I was first introduced to you, but we'll go through that in a little bit. So let's go back to Greenbrier County real quick. My first dogs that I bought come out of a guy that hunted and lived in Greenbrier, White Sulphur Springs.
Who was it?
Porter Burdett.
Burdett. I know some Burdetts, but
yeah, they own a big farm over there. And how that happened with me is, at that time, my girlfriend, her roommate was his girlfriend, and we were over there at the college one night hanging out. I think we went out to eat and whatever. He got to talk about these bear dogs, and of course that's how I ended up with bear dogs, and these plot dogs that come out of. And my first plot was a dog named Ace, and he was a he was a Weems and Jailbred dog. I actually still have his papers. I've got the 7-generation papers at the house. But yeah, I got my first dogs out of Greenbrier.
Wonder,
County.
Where at? Was it near Monroe County, or do you remember?
No, near he lived up in White Sulphur.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
There's a dam over there. Isn't there a reservoir or something there?
A Bluestone Dam.
No. Yeah. Mm-mm. When you go through Caldwell and you go up into White Sulphur and you take the left, and I think it goes up 92, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You go straight.
I
lived
you.
Over there.
Moomaw or towards. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember, but it's been years since I've been, but I'd only been to his house one time. But yeah, that's where he was from, and that's where my first dogs come from.
Gotcha.
And you know, for you guys listening, you West Virginians, now y'all will know, but I mean, Greenbrier County is a kind of a mecca of bear hunting.
Oh yeah, it's huge.
There was a guy, I can't remember his last name, but when I started getting my Cameron dogs, His name was Lee, and he lived right in downtown White Sulphur, which is not downtown. But
right,
yeah,
right.
But he had some old dogs that was bred kind of the same way mine were.
Gotcha.
And I was actually going to breed to his male dog, my little bell female. God, I cannot remember his last name. It was Lee something. But anyway, he lived in White Sulphur, too.
I know. Gosh dang it. I think I know who you're talking about. Is he older or younger?
He was a couple years older than me.
Yep.
So now back then I was, 20 some.
I know his last name better than I know my own.
I want to say it starts with a C. But anyway. All right. So
I got it right here. That's going to bug. Maybe I don't. I'll think of it in the jiffy.
All right. So you graduated and y'all come here.
Yeah, I've been a mixed animal practice for, since I graduated. I loved the large animal, mainly, food animal, more towards the cow-calf. Mm-hmm. And that's all really changed in the last few months. I'm doing something a lot different now.
Yeah.
But we moved here, worked for, Dr. Wall there, mm-hmm. Bold Springs Veterinary Service, and was there. I was there for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought a place here and just kind of got hit with an opportunity to work a lot less and hunt a lot more and,
yeah.
See the family more. And that's kind of what life's about to me, man. Family hunting. And I mean, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So life's good.
So who did in our group, I'm assuming you and Hot Rod hooked up first.
Yeah. So Sam is kind of, yeah, he's the first guy I met. I worked on his Molly dog, who's the mama to,
mm-hmm.
I guess that was the first cross to Spook, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And she had come in, and she had been to several vets with a swollen spot on her ribs, and we mm-hmm. ended up, I cut a big old hunk out of her, and she had a migrating grass on that had kind of mm-hmm. plopped out through her ribs there. And I met him, and I had just got my first dog Booger, the blue tick.
Wasn't
worth killing. and me and Sam got to talking, and it was shortly after bear season, and I was running him out here. I didn't have a tracking collar, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And after bear season, Sam let me use his tracking collar, and he got me this old cougar dog that's sitting here right beside me right now through Glenn Price, and Lindell Price owned him, and he's kind of who I've trained everything that I got now off of as far as coon dogs go. I've had a lot of cull dogs, but I got one decent one out there that'll tree a coon.
So you had hunted with hounds before, but you never owned any until you come here.
Right. Dad never would. Growing up, he tried, and I can see why, because I would have been, hound brains are real. It's ridiculous. Ask my wife.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Well, you just seen what's out there. I mean, there's freaking dogs coming out of my ear.
Yeah.
And, it's just, I love it.
Yeah. So, Molly, I remember when Molly had that, and I was trying to think, and Sam had told, I don't remember what happened or what dog it was, but Sam had told me to come and see you.
Right.
It was Pearl. That was the first dog I brought to you.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, because we were on the mountain and she had that happen.
She got bit in the mm-hmm. hind leg there.
Yeah. And that was the first time. So that's been three or four years ago. Yeah.
Me and Sam hunted. I mean, we used to hunt out here five, six nights a week.
Yeah.
And, nice. And then I've met just a pile of all the bear hunters and all the different groups through, just being the vet. So,
well, and word of mouth travels too. I mean, hey, take them to Garrett,
right. So I never got my first hound that I owned was that Booger dog.
I got you. I remember that. Yeah, I remember we hunted him a whole training season.
Yeah.
Hot Rod brought him with us.
Hot Rod's box up. I'm surprised he didn't kill him.
he had to redo the whole box, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That dog was an idiot. I mean, he was track-minded, but he wouldn't tree.
Yeah.
And it's like he had ADD.
Yeah.
I spent a lot. Finally culled him out a year and found him a nice home where he can be a pet.
Yeah.
I got a little walker jip after that, and she turned into a real dog.
It looks like my house outside. Like, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got a lot of youngins, though. Whew.
Yeah, I got too many youngins.
I got 5, 6 under 2 years old, which isn't good. And then Trip is just 2, so that's 7. Yeah, so half of my... I only got 3 older dogs. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, that's kind of me. We ended up getting... Well, talking about Greenbrier County, so we've hunted on a lease... Well, my family hunted on it before it was a lease. It's Clear Creek Rod and Gun Club,
mm-hmm.
which we hunted on it before. It was still Briar Knob Sportsman. There was 3 different clubs, but now it's that mm-hmm. it's 87,000 acre lease, and that's where, I mean, it's bear hunting mm-hmm. haven, which you can't bear. I mean, it's been, they haven't accepted new bear hunters for probably 10 years, which sucks, but that's where I've hunted my whole life, and where Ruby. Uh-huh. Which is the English dog that mm-hmm. I got now that is kind of really the only reason I'm getting on there was mm-hmm. that guy I met through that club and, right. you know, grew up around, so.
Right.
And a mutual friend, Bo Willoughby, kind of hooked me up with that dog, so.
Yeah. Bo and Dean and
mm-hmm.
all them, yeah, they're good. And I, you know, yeah, they're good guys. I worked with Dean for several years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they are. They catch a lot of bear.
And they hunt hard.
Oh, my. We went to Boone County a couple weeks ago, and, yeah, I mean, their mm-hmm. dogs are – they're in shape.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They got them youngins that can run all night long. That's what it is.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
I think they finally had to put a bridle on them, tell them to chill out.
Yeah.
They were doing hunting daylight to dark.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some – so let's talk about the one thing I wanted to really talk to you about is, because you give me a lot of advice. I mean, man, I can't tell you the times that I've picked up the phone and just text you right. all hours of the day and night if I'm awake. I'm usually in bed by 10 o'clock, but, you know, texting you, you give me information. I mean, I was in New York year before last, and I had a dog at home that was sick, and I was texting you back and forth and
right.
sending your messages to Chelsea to get her to do whatever. So it's just been I think, you know, there's so much information that you pass on, and I want to make sure that everybody has some of that opportunity. So let's talk about breeding females, and once they're bred, some of the things that we should do, because one of the things that comes up all the time is, and I don't know why I get asked this question because I don't know the answer, is about giving them shots, worming right, them right. during the pregnancy, you know, what
right.
at what stages, or should I not do that? So
right.
just kind of dip into that. Tell us what we should and shouldn't be yeah. doing, or a good practice.
Right, right. Well, you know, before you breed the gyp, or whenever you have your planned breeding, mm-hmm. you know, the health of the female is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And that should take place and be gotten in line before even making the cross, before she comes into heat.
Right.
You know, you don't want to vaccinate a dog that's pregnant. All the vaccines that we utilize are modified live vaccines, so they could actually cause some issues giving them to a pregnant dog.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, pre-breeding, they should be up to date on their vaccines, because a lot of the puppies get the immunoglobulins or the antibodies and their immune system
mm-hmm.
Through placental attachment, so, and then they get a lot through the first milk and the colostrum, which we'll get into that a yes. little bit later. So, but so, go ahead.
So go. Let's go back. So, what would you say is the necessary vaccinations before you breed?
So,
because there's right. a thousand of yep. them out there. Let's break it yep. down to you need these two or these three or these five, whatever right. you think is necessary.
Right. So there's core vaccines and there's non-core. Core vaccines are by the AVMA are set forth, and that's kind of what everything needs and what is recommended, and that's what these dogs need, and that is what we would call, you know, the five-way: distemper,
uh-huh. yep.
adenovirus, parvo, and parainfluenza.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the vaccines that are in that, and you should always look, you know, if you're not getting them from the veterinarian, I mean, I would recommend getting them from the veterinarian. Not saying that the feed stores don't have good vaccines, but you don't know how they're handled.
Well, and, let's break into that, because I worked at Tractor Supply
right.
for 3 years, and I used to go to old Doc Taylor
Right.
And with
Yelia,
him.
Yeah.
And she was so good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me one time, she says, Heath, she says, don't go and get this stuff from where, you know,
right.
Tractor Supply had just started coming on way back then. She's like, you might as well be putting water in them. She said, if you need them, you call me. I'll get you stuff, what you need, and you come pick it up.
Right.
And I always did that. But then after I moved, and of course she's passed on,
right.
I have bought stuff at Tractor Supply in the southern states and,
right.
you know, Royal King, the places that we would buy them.
Yeah.
But from working at Tractor Supply, I see exactly what you're saying. When you have people that are responsible for stocking and they don't understand the importance of keeping that in the dry ice and taking care of it and getting it back into the refrigerated cooler that you keep the shots in, I have seen stuff set out on the floor for 2 days.
Oh yeah,
before.
Right.
That's when Miss Taylor told me, kind of smacked me in the face. I'm like, wait. So anytime that stuff come in, I try to take care of it myself.
Right. Right.
If I was there and it was in, that was the very first thing I took care of. I got it right out, put it in the refrigerator. And of course, you have to start locking the stuff up because people
right.
are stealing it. So that's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yes.
And honestly, you'd almost be better off just to buy. You can get on, you know, I don't know all the names of the companies online, but Allivet and all those, and you can actually just order
the case of
25. You're going to need it for the pups anyway.
Right.
So the bitch before breeding needs those four, and then I always give them a lepto. I mean, these hounds are exposed to lepto. Leptospirosis is a spirochete bacterium that causes kidney and liver failure.
Uh-huh.
And by the time you diagnose it, they're in kidney and liver failure. It's passed by all mammals in their urine, placenta, cattle, you know, sheep, goats, horses, deer. I mean, it's in the water. So, you know, they're drinking out of the spring or the creek or a mud hole or whatever. So they need that vaccine.
And so that's the five-way.
Well, that's really what people would call, I guess.
And does the lepto come in that?
No, you need to look. Most people call that the seven-way.
Okay,
that's got the lepto in it. You just need to know those pathogens and look, because I've had people that have vaccinated dogs, and I've had parvo dogs come in that were vaccinated, and using that term vaccinated very loosely, I'll go into that later, but it didn't even have parvo in it. You know, because you've got to look at and see what's in it. Distemper, adenovirus, parvo, parainfluenza, and lepto. There's four strains of lepto. And they don't just, so, you know, most hound guys, and me included, when you're older dogs, when they get older, by the time that dog's proven and you want to make that cross and utilize and breed her, most of us, I mean, keeping up with annual vaccines, sometimes you might miss a year, get a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. So if you do, that's fine, but you got to booster it. So, 3 to 4 weeks later, you got to come back and booster that vaccine. And it takes 2 to 3 weeks to mount an immune response to that vaccine. So you want to do that, you know, before she's coming into heat.
So you're saying give her two shots.
Absolutely. So, unless she's up to date. Unless she's been getting them annually.
Correct.
You know,
right. And most of us don't.
No,
after they get a certain age.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just as guilty as anyone.
I keep up with my rabies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have to.
Right. And, you know, Lyme's a whole nother deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I started here, we didn't recommend a Lyme vaccine because they still get Lyme.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of going down a rabbit hole here. But, you know, we're in an endemic area for Lyme disease. You know, that's not going to help the puppies by any means, giving a Lyme vaccine. But I've started doing all my dogs, and they will still get it. But we're seeing about 1 out of 10 develop. You know, they go and they get what we term a glomerular nephritis, where they go into acute renal failure, so their kidneys are shot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a dead dog.
Right.
And the vaccine, there's studies that show it decreases the chance of that happening. And we utilized it for 2 years before I left Bold Springs, and the company stood behind every one of the dogs. You know, if your dog gets Lyme, they pay for everything. And we did have one dog that went into kidney failure. I mean, that was vaccinated. So, you know, it's like vaccines aren't perfect, but... But, yeah, so back to pre-breeding. So vaccines and then
how far before?
So as long as it doesn't really matter if it's in that year window, you know what I mean, and she's up to date within a year.
Right.
But if you know you're going to breed her, you know.
Get on it.
Get on it and just get it done. And then get her on something for flea and tick. I mean, I've seen a lot of puppies with flea-induced anemias and just, you know, they're trying to survive and nurse, and when they have fleas crawling all over them and biting them, I mean, it doesn't take long for them to get anemic. So, and you want to give that before. Like, Bravecto now is great. I mean, it's a three-month product. So, and there's nothing that's labeled for a pregnant or lactating bitch. Not that they're not safe, but, you know, it's a dog. They're not going to spend the money to find out, the pharmaceutical companies, if it's safe to give a pregnant dog, you know. So you're not going to find anything that, that is labeled that. So you want to give the preventative prior to, you know, breeding and whelping. And Bravecto is great to utilize because you could give it and it lasts 3 months, which covers you.
And we're all kind of using that because you've put us on it.
And it's a great product. I mean, I use it, and that Canada Veterinary Care, I mean,
Canadian Pet Care.
I order it through the, I mean, you can get it cheaper through there than the veterinarians can get it at cost.
Right.
So, and then, you know, heartworm preventative, I mean, it depends kind of where you're at. I keep mine on it mainly because it's a broad spectrum dewormer as well, and it's a lot cheaper. Interceptor Plus has got praziquantel in it, which get round whips, hooks, tapes, and then, you know, you got your heartworm preventative as well in that. And, you know, giving them that monthly is a good idea as well. But, and then prior to, so, and then environment, having a plan. And one thing, a pet peeve of mine, and a lot of my friends do it, you know, they make a cross, and then you're at, you know, 57 days, and they're calling, oh, man, she's been nesting for 3 days. I mean, damn, she ain't been eating. What do you think? Well, when they tie? Oh, gosh, I can't remember. Write it down.
Yes.
You know, because there's a big difference in, you know, if she is 64, 65 days, okay, that's a big difference than if she's 58. So that's one thing that it always happens.
Well, so in Fancy, the litter we just had,
right?
She had at 58.
Right.
She was stressed.
Yeah.
We failed. Forrest was going to bring her to the house, and for whatever reason, work schedule, something happened. We didn't get. I wanted her over 2 weeks before.
Yeah. I was going to talk about that. Yeah. We will. Absolutely. Yep.
And I didn't. He didn't. And we kind of brought her in. And I mean, 3 days later, Chelsea's calling me. She's like, because I was at work. She's like, something ain't right. And I'm like, we'll take her in the house, get her settled.
Right.
And so she was early because of stress.
Right. Yep. Right.
So
right.
Go ahead and tell. You know.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, have a plan. If you know the dog lot's not where you know the gyp's going to whelp. Have a plan as to, you know, what you're going to do and when you're going to do it, especially if you're having a litter in the winter and it's cold and, you know, kind of know what you're going to do. That is one thing that I've seen a lot of issues. Who's that barking? Is that puppy?
No, it's...
Oh, my gosh, that damn dog. I'm going to have to get let her in here in a second. But where were we at? The transitioning,
yeah.
You don't want to. I've had that happen a lot where someone will just get behind, busy with life and family, and then, oh, crap, you know, we're 2 days from and then they try to make that move, and that doesn't go well, especially after they've started nesting. And
yes,
you can cause a lot of issues. You know, they'll just quit. And I've had people, even once they go into labor, they have a puppy, and they're like, oh, crap, you know, it's right in the spring, and it's going to be 32 degrees tonight, but it's been 50 every night before, and you know, then you're in that predicament.
Yeah.
So just have a plan, and a clean environment too is very important. You know, all these parasites come from the ground, and it's hard on the bitch, and it affects, you know, the overall health affects their the quality of milk and everything. So
when you talk about a clean environment, this is something that's always in, and I've raised several litters throughout my career, and by no means am I perfect because I'm continually learning.
Right.
But
right.
I see a lot of people putting, so I bring my dogs inside.
Right.
And I bring them inside. I've got a whelping box that I've made, and it's a 4x4 square. It's got the runners so the dog can't roll over and squish the puppies. It's got gives them something to slide up under. And I put down out like an outdoor carpet.
Right.
Not the green kind with the big, but like a something you'd put on a boat deck or something, the carpet. And what I do is after she makes a mess, I just roll it up and I put another piece down. So I buy it in a little sheet.
Right.
And I do that. But I've seen a lot of people putting down blankets and towels.
Yeah.
For me, and I mean, for me, that's just something for them to get hung up in and get squished or get tangled up and die.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what kind of environment would you... And I mean, yeah, some people, like I said, some people do it different if you're going to have them outside in the summertime. I mean, I've had dogs outside the summertime in an igloo because
I
didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
So it's happened, but preferably, what would you consider a good setup? No, it don't have to be perfect, but what would be a good setup?
Right. So, you know, definitely a welcome box.
Yeah.
And something that the Jip can get out and get away from the puppies and go out and kind of do her thing. And, you know, concrete. I mean, even if they're on dirt, they're on gravel, they're on concrete, keeping them in that welcome box, the puppies are going to be in the welcome box for, you know, at least a few weeks.
Yeah.
But, and then just having plenty of room, being mindful of your water bowls. And I've seen a lot of puppies drown, you know, and, you know, how shallow they are or how tall they are to where the pups can't get in them. And just little husbandry stuff like that's extremely important.
Right.
And a lot of people just use a good old swimming pool.
Yeah.
And it works. I mean,
it's easy to clean, but
again, you just got to make that transition soon enough. Get them comfortable in their environment because if you do it too late, like you were saying, you know, that's where you can get into problems.
Yeah. And we lost several pups because of that.
Right.
I mean, we had three stillborn. And I think that was the 3 days of stress. That was just me.
Right.
But so let's go back real quick. So just to clarify. So during the pregnancy, we should not be introducing any shots.
No.
Okay.
Right.
And what about worm medicine?
Yep. So worm medicine, it's good to deworm them before pregnancy, or even if you have, you know, your local vet, you can swing a piece of poop back there and they can do a fecal sample for, you know, $12.
Yeah.
Just to see if she does have any intestinal parasites. But most of us aren't going to do that. So Safeguard, fenbendazole. Mm-hmm. It's called Safeguard because it's safe. That's what we generally utilize in, you know, pregnant dogs.
Right.
And, you know, you can give it, there's a few different ways to give it. In a true wormy dog, I'll give it, you know, several days in a row and then space it out every 2 weeks for a couple treatments. But hopefully she's not, because she's been taken care of because of this. She's in good body condition. She's
clean
been fed accordingly.
Yep.
You know, and that's another thing with feed. Transitioning these dogs kind of that 3/4 gestation at about, you know, 40 days, start giving them some puppy food. Mix puppy food in with the adult dog food. It's just got more calcium, more phosphorus in it. And then by the time they're whelping, it's good to be weighted towards the puppy food as to the regular dog food, just for the calcium requirements. I mean, we still see a lot of milk fever in dogs.
Yep.
It's a very common thing, unfortunately, in big litters or Jips or female dogs that aren't nutritionally sound when they go into to whelping and raising pups, especially as these pups are nursing more. You know, when they get to be 3 or 4 weeks old and she's got 12 on her, by golly, it's hard on them.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, and leaving them alone is a big thing, too. You know, once they start whelping, everyone wants to, you know, go in and watch them and
so
Oxymama. I've never heard of that.
So that was a supplement we bought for Fancy, for the calcium.
Right.
She was worried because her milk hadn't dropped, and of course you had told me it could take a day or two after. Don't worry. Don't panic.
Right.
And that was what, like I said, that's some more of the things I learned from you. But we ended up buying that, and mixing it in her food.
Right.
And it made a huge, huge difference.
Right.
So there are some supplements out there that you can use if you do your research for that calcium. I don't even feed my puppies puppy food.
Right. A lot of people don't. Yeah. I mean, I mix Pride in with mine.
Yeah.
The thing about they like the puppy food more. I think it's a little bit more palatable.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
And another thing, too. So, and I do this, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but usually when I get into that 45 days, I'm not trying to make them blow up like a blimp.
Right.
But usually I start adding a little food because usually after that initial, they have the pups and the pups start sucking, they get drained down pretty quick.
Right.
And then catching back up.
Yep. And sometimes they'll go off food. You know, they'll go off of feed just because they are stressed, especially first time mamas. You know, if it's their first litter, it's not uncommon to get a call. People, you know, she hadn't eaten 3 days. Well, you know, go get you some good old nasty Alpo and throw it in there.
Right. Get
something in there. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and then when they're having them, just leaving them alone.
Yes.
You know, letting them, Mother Nature figures itself out. And then there's always the stress of, you know, another thing, knowing how many they're going to have. Some people don't care. A lot of people want to know. If you want to know, you know, at 45 days, fetal ossification occurs. So I usually try to wait till about 50 days, and you can shoot an X-ray and you can count skulls. And it's not 100%. I mean, you know, if they're plumb jack full, yeah. But you know, hey, she's got 8. I know she's got 8. She might have more. So if she has 6, and then you know, hey, well, I know there's 2 more. So, yeah, maybe I should be a little bit worried. And, you know, then you can call your vet and then, you know, you can ultrasound as early as 21 days. I try to wait till 25, but that's just to confirm pregnancy. You can't count, you know, pups with an ultrasound.
Right.
You'll count the same pup twice. I've tried to do it a lot.
So the X-ray is the better route.
It's the only route to really get an accurate, you know, count. But, yeah, so once she starts whelping, you know, my rule of thumb's kind of, it used to always be, you know, they should have them every 1 to 2 hours, but that's really not practical, you know, after being out and having some dogs whelp and then, you know, practicing. Sometimes the main thing is they're not in distress, you know. If they have 3 and then it's been a couple hours, but they're nursing them and, you know, they're acting normal, it's nothing to be overtly concerned about. Whenever you should be getting concerned is when they're pushing and they're trying to have a puppy and, you know, they're not making progress. So, and then having a plan for that, you know, having some gloves and having some lube, because sometimes you got to get in there and feel what's going on and maybe help her out. Once the gyp's taken care of, you know, she has the litter, we call it normal loca, you know, they have discharge sometimes for up to a month.
And right,
it's usually
right.
a couple of weeks. And I mean, it can be pretty, you know, voluminous, a lot of it. So, of course that's normal. It's kind of blood tinged and darker. And then continuing to keep up with the calcium and feeding them, keeping them eating good. And then I usually start and recommend kind of a gruel for the puppies, especially if it's a large litter around that 3 week range. You know, and then the first deworming as well.
Right.
You know, roundworms, there's a lot of intestinal parasites that are transmammary. So they actually, you know, we try to address it like we just talked about, you know, having her clean. But the thing about a dewormer, you give a dog a dewormer, you deworm them. 2 days later, they go eat a turd or they're licking food because you threw it on the ground or they spilt their food. They can pick them right back up.
Right.
So, you know, I always, at 3 weeks, they get pyrenol or, you know, quote unquote, Nemex. Pyrenol pamoate, yeah. And then I like to deworm them every 2 weeks. So, unlike ruminants, you know, cattle, sheep, goats, they get all of their immunoglobulins through the colostrum for the most part. I mean, if a calf don't get colostrum within 24 hours, you might as well whack him on the head. I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean. It's extremely important, and it's extremely important in dogs as well. But they do get a lot through the placenta, just from the different placental attachments. They have a zonary placenta, so the placenta kind of wraps around the pup. They all have, every, you know, mammal has a different placental attachment. But the colostrum, it's, they need to get, you know, as much within the first 12 hours of life of the receptors that bind the immunoglobulin start to internalize within the intestines and in the gut. So if they don't get enough within the first 24 hours, you know, they don't have as good of an immune system. So their immune system, basically from day 1 to 6 weeks, everything's riding on what they got from their mama. And at 6 weeks, from 6 to 16 weeks, is when there's a huge lag. They're extremely susceptible to mainly parvo. I mean, we've pretty much, we haven't got rid of distemper, but we don't see a lot of distemper. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never seen a case. I've been practicing for 6 years. You know, all the old vets that I work for talk about it. And then adenovirus, parainfluenza, those, we just don't, we've pretty much got rid of them through vaccines. But parvo is, I mean, it, we still deal with it a lot. Right. And up to 6 weeks, if the bitch was vaccinated, they are, you know, extremely resistant to that. And another thing to be mindful is bringing new dogs in during mm-hmm. that time. You need to, you know, practice some biosecurity there, just common sense stuff.
Right.
Because they can certainly bring bugs in, and it might not be parvo. It could be some respiratory pathogen, or, you know, what mm-hmm. whatever it might be. But anyway, so every 2 weeks deworming, you know, typically weaning around 6 weeks. Sometimes mm-hmm. if they got a big litter, and you got to listen to the female too, if she's getting ill and not, like, you know, she might wean them at 5 weeks.
Right.
That's why it's good to have them on that gruel mm-hmm. and start to feed them and supplement them in case something does happen. They're already started on food. But we kind of target that six weeks as our initial vaccine. You know, it's arguable that at 8 weeks, if the bitch was vaccinated appropriately, they don't, but 6 weeks is a good rule of thumb. At 6 weeks, they don't need the lepto. They need distemper, adenovirus, parvo, and parainfluenza.
Which is your 5-way.
Which is your 5-way, yeah. Yep. So, you give that vaccine. They don't make an immune, they have an immune response, but they don't make antibodies to that for 2 to 3 weeks. So, you know, if you give a vaccine, that does no good for that puppy until 2 weeks. Then they really titer up good, stays up for 3 weeks, and it starts coming down. And that's why we target 3 to 4 week boosters until 16 weeks of age. That's so important.
So basically, I mean, every 3 weeks.
Yep, every 3 to 4. I mean, okay. That's the window. So if you give a puppy a shot at 6 weeks,
yep,
and you give the puppy a shot at 10 weeks, and then you don't give that puppy any more shots, it's unvaccinated. I mean, completely. Because the way that the immune system matures after 12 weeks of age, that's where it's overtly important that they get 2 shots 3 to 4 weeks apart. And that's the same if you get a new dog. You know, if you if you get a dog that's 6 months old, or, you know, you get a puppy that's a little bit older, that's 12 weeks old, you know, they need 2 shots 3 to 4 weeks apart. And at 12 weeks, so 6, 9, 12, and 16 is kind of, you know, what we shoot for. At the 12 and 16 is when they need the lepto. And all these hounds need lepto. Again, you know, it's pretty much untreatable. I mean, it's treatable, but very treatable. But you got to find it. You got to catch it in time. And it's not easy to diagnose. And it's costly to diagnose and costly to treat.
So two $15 shots and we're taken care of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And, you know, then at that 16 weeks, they get the rabies shot as well. Mm-hmm. And then I always try to do Lyme at 12 and 16 here. You know, we're in an endemic area. Mm-hmm. Lyme disease is, it's crazy. I was picking ticks off me this morning.
I got one off me. I had rode up, went up in the mountains Tuesday to do a little scouting and picked two off of my pants, crawling up my pants.
Right.
Yeah.
And all winter. I mean, I coon hunted hard last winter and December, I mean, January, it didn't matter. They're out, and it's year-round, which is very important for a flea and tick preventative, you know, to be given year-round.
It's costly, but you kind of taught me, you, I mean, you kind of told me that the best antidote for is preventative.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure every time, especially if you got a good dog. I mean, if you got something that, and by the time, if you're feeding it and you're hunting it, you obviously, it's a good dog to use. So, can you replace it? Well, might as well take care of it.
I mean, like you said, I buy the Brevecto in pretty much bulk now.
Right.
I mean, I'm buying 8 or 10 at a time. Yeah. And if you get them on sale, a lot of times they'll have those sales and that discount's almost 40%.
Yeah, you can get it cheap, real cheap.
Yeah. All right, so we're 16 weeks old. We've given the shots at 3, 6, 9, 12, and 16.
Yep.
Give them our rabies shots. So let's talk about hit on it real quick about, of course, nutrition.
Right.
I think most people raising pups feed twice a day.
Yeah.
I think. I think that's a common practice.
Right.
And talk about how, as they grow, the growth plates, how exercise. Right. And I didn't really know this stuff until I got into the law enforcement side. And we started dealing with some younger dogs and putting some stress on them.
They have OCD lesions or anything like that? Where they get chips in their joint.
Where you put too much pressure on them and it causes it. So talk about a little bit about nutrition, what you think a good practice should be. And then let's talk about the growth plates and the development of the dog structurally.
So the nutrition side of it, you can go in so many dang rabbit holes. And nutrition in general, there's so many good commercial dog foods now are great. I mean, as far as for the well pet diet, performance hound, whatever you're feeding, but there's some things that we need to avoid, and the biggest thing is grain-free. Mm-hmm. Anything grain-free, they did a retrospective study looking, basically what that means is they're looking, they had a population of dogs that were dying from a cardiomyopathy or a heart disease that we had pretty much gotten rid of through good, wholesome, well-pet diets. And there was this grain-free, hippie kick or whatever you want to call it, kind of a niche marketing deal. Mm-hmm. Well, after 3 or 4 years, we started having all these dogs that were dying from this cardiomyopathy. Mm-hmm. And in the study, that was the conclusion, was every one of those dogs was on a grain-free diet. So I don't know of any veterinarians that recommend a grain-free diet. So that's something we want to avoid. But Eukanuba, Purina, Iams, Hills, Royal Canin, and all those foods that have been out there forever, essentially, and they certainly have tiers of quality of food throughout those, and a lot of them have a veterinary line. Pride, Joy. I mean, I've fed all of them, and I don't have a bad thing to say about any of them. I think they're all good foods. It's just kind of what we like and what our dogs seem to do better on. The puppy foods, I like to keep food out to them. I mean, up to 16 weeks of age and really to 6 months, and not keep food out, but I try to keep food out till about 12 weeks, and then I try to start dialing them back and feeding a little bit more to condition twice a day, and then I'll transition them. I mean, I feed once a day. I just don't have time to feed, twice a day. But once they hit that 8-month mark, I try to start, transition them to a once a day feeding.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's extremely important that they are on a good diet for, growth, joint development, and overall health. Mm-hmm. So we do see a lot of the things that we see are OCD lesions and certain issues are nutritional based. But some of it's just from doing too much with the pups at too early of an age.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to be going on several mile roading them at, 4 and 5 months of age, several miles every day, and just using common sense.
Right.
Because you can certainly set yourself up for some issues.
Yeah.
But the growth plates, usually kind of that 12 to 15 month mark is where they start to close. And that kind of dependent on breed as well. But for most of the hounds, that's kind of going to hit it. Some of them can be a little later.
Mm-hmm.
But What else was we talking about there? I got kind of lost.
No, that's it. I mean, like I said, you know, for me, and like I said, you're the vet, but some of the things that's very important to me is I start worming my dogs immediately when I can.
Right.
I keep up. That's a very structured schedule that I keep with them.
Right.
Since you've been on me about the shot updates and stuff, I have been more conscious of that. Of course, the feeding stuff, I've always kind of done the same way. You know, I'm like you. I kind of keep dog food in front of the puppies at a very young age, and then as it goes, I'm bringing it down until
right.
I feed once a day too. The puppies, I don't. I do them differently.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
So I mean, I kind of do the same things, but I have had not me myself, but I've seen issues where they're putting too much pressure on those young dogs structurally,
right?
And then they have some type of breakdown on them.
Yep.
And that was something that I felt like should be touched on. So before we wrap this up, we had, you know, we've had some issues with the dogs in the heat, and you know, you and I had kind of talked about this. And I think it's very important because you guys have heard me say on this podcast how, you know, I'm very aware of the heat, the humidity levels. And you heard them say a couple weeks ago, you know, that you know, 9 or 10 o'clock when it gets warm, I'm pulling my dogs off. Like, I'm catching them. I'm trying to cut them off. I'm not trying to give them a heat stroke. And we've had a couple dogs in this area that I don't know that they've had heat stroke, but heat exhaustion.
Right.
And some of those dogs have passed on. And you and I had kind of talked about how that heat affects the dogs long term. And you can kind of give us the medical breakdown of what's going on and what to look for and how to, you know, maybe how to prevent that.
Right, right. And, you know, preventing it is hard. I mean, when we have training season in August, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just hard. You know, I wish they would give us a month and a half in the spring, and then we pick it back up in September and go to October. But anyway, it is what it is. So yeah, I mean, we see it every year. See several dogs die from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, save a lot of dogs too that are brought in time. And then it's very important that, you know, once a dog is, whether they're exhausted, they're having a heat stroke, is doing the right things whenever they're having it. Because the things we want to do actually a lot of times makes it worse.
Which would be, one of the examples would be
going to the creek and just
putting
water all over them. I mean, they evaporate. That's how they cool.
Yeah.
You know, they pant, they evaporate. So when you douse a dog in water, it's holding the heat in. The best thing, and everyone needs to have a thermometer. That's another thing. I'm going to hit on that real quick.
Yep.
I should have said it earlier. Right when before a bitch whelps, her temperature, she usually has a pretty dramatic temperature drop. You know, and that's something else to look for. You know, she'll run at 100.5. You'll be checking it twice a day before she whelps. A lot of times they'll get down to 98. But anyway, the reason I'm saying that is we should all have a thermometer. They're extremely important. I mean, it's just a very valuable tool. Whether we're dealing with a pregnant bitch that should be whelping, a dog that ain't eating, a dog that ain't right, you know. But there should be one in the dog box too. And whenever a dog is having a heat stroke, it's good to take a temperature and see where they're at. What's considered a heat stroke is, I think it's over 105.8. Uh-huh. You know, anything over 105, we start to see, or 105.8, and 106, they call it cellular apoptosis. So the cells are dying.
Uh-huh.
And they can go into what we call disseminated intravascular coagulation, which is where basically everything starts getting activated within the coagulation system. And, I mean, we call it dead end cage.
They're starting to shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they get neurologic and, you know. So what we can do if they do heat stroke, the best thing to do is have, you know, a spray bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually just mist them and spray them. And you put them in the truck. You roll the windows down and haul ass to the vet. You know, and put the AC on. and keep spraying them and just get them to the vet as soon as you can. Yeah, so as far as, you know, from a pathophysiology level, you know, there it's a lot goes on whenever their temperature gets that high. But cell death is the main thing.
Is that what's affecting the kidneys to cause these dogs to shut down?
So whenever they, you know, they also cool by vasodilation. So their vessels will actually expand, and that's why they used to always say put alcohol on their feet,
mm-hmm.
because they would say that would cool them, and on their ears, well, it actually causes vasoconstriction, and that's not recommended anymore. But yeah, so whenever, you know, 25% of cardiac output goes to the kidneys. So when they're, you know, suffering a heat stroke, the kidneys get underperfused. So even though if we pull a dog out, you know, of a crisis, there's still a lot of times there's damage that occurs.
Uh-huh.
And they can develop, you know, kidney issues from that. It's something very common. And another thing that we see is if a dog heat strokes this year, it's more likely to heat stroke next year or next week, or, you know, mm-hmm. it seems like once they have one, they're more apt to have another. And that's something that I've certainly seen repeatedly, and have seen dogs get worse every year and then end up dying, you know, from a heat stroke.
So what causes that reoccurrence?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think some dogs just can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to the point where, you know, you almost wonder if they shouldn't be, you know, sold to be hunted in a different environment, especially here. I mean,
yeah.
You know, we get August and September and it's a hot. Little bit of October, and then December to have one that, you know, you have to really watch. I mean, some of them would do better in a different environment where they can be hunted.
In a cooler environment.
In a cooler environment. So. Yeah. I think a lot of it is genetic, and you can't prove that, you know, as far as it being genetic, but
right.
It certainly makes you wonder.
Well, I can tell you through the line that I've read for, you know, 20 plus
right.
years, I can tell you that I had a dog named Racket who did not do well in the heat. If you were running her in hot weather and she'd come out in the road, she'd jump in the first mud puddle, she'd get in a creek, she'd lay down. She did not perform well.
Right.
In the wintertime, different dog.
Right.
So she had a litter of puppies, and one of the females out of that litter named Abby done the same thing.
Right. Right.
And then Abby had a litter of puppies, and I have one at my house right now called Little Man, and he is the same way. I have seen that through three generations. That those dogs are not well in heat.
Right.
They don't do. Now, Little Man has a little bit coarser hair, and I don't know where it comes from, because through the generations that I've raised, I haven't seen that. But he has coarser hair than the other dogs, and he's got a thicker coat.
Right.
So, in my mind, I was kind of thinking, well, it's just because he's got a little bit heavier coat. And then we started having a conversation. I don't know who I was having a conversation with. I'm like, wait a second. His mother done the same thing, and her mother done the same thing.
Right,
like,
right.
So I started tracing it back.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's three generations. Almost 20 years. Well, it is. It's almost 20 years of dogs doing the same thing.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it certainly is genetic.
Yeah.
Another big thing too, because, you know, sometimes you're going to have dogs that are heat exhausted or mm-hmm. maybe they start to come around. You got to be careful on when you stop cooling them, because you can actually, like, we quit cooling a dog, you know, once it gets to the clinic and we're cooling it and it's on IV fluids, getting shock doses of fluids, and we're doing all the things, you know, 103 is where we stop, because it continues to go down.
Yeah,
and I've seen dogs that, you know, have been cooled too much too quick, and you know, they don't discontinue cooling and they get cold. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, so while we're on this real quick, and then we'll cut this off. So, in our police dogs, when we're tracking in the summertime, even in the spring with the humidity, when the humidity level starts getting up again, and we see it in the fall. There's been several times that we've been tracking, and I start seeing my dog getting light in the rear end.
Right.
You start seeing a little bit of swaying.
Oh, yeah, they get ataxic. Yep.
And, of course, that's my immediate stop. It's done. We're done with it. But I see – we see that happen quite a bit.
Right.
But I guess we're not – we're catching it quick enough. We're not pushing it to that level.
Right.
Would that be
– Oh, yeah, and that's the thing with the hounds is, you know, we don't see that.
Yeah,
because we're not – we're looking at them on the Garmin and saying, oh, man.
Yeah.
They're dropping back. Oh, yeah. They're treed, yeah, their head's up in the air because they're trying to radiate and evaporate and cool everything because that's how they cool, you know, is they pant.
Yeah.
And I think having, you know, and it's hard. I mean, that's like this year that Wesley's
Koa.
That bear that dog ended up heat stroking on, Karma brought that to the top.
Yep.
It was 11 o'clock. Me and Sam packed it. It was stupid, but I mean – the sound of the hound blowing up in the box is
powerful. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. And thank God, you know, we ended up
catching it pretty quick. Yeah.
And but I mean, that was just, you know, it could have been a disaster.
Yeah.
Because hounds don't have any quit in them, and they're going to keep going. So.
Yeah. Well, Garrett, is there anything left, you know, on the puppies, on the females when they're bred that you want to add, take away?
You know, not that I can really think of. Yeah, not right off.
Well,
went down a few rabbit holes there. I don't know what I all said, but
no, it's all good. But well, I really appreciate it. And the kids are back. They got supper, and we are gonna go turn some hounds loose, aren't we?
You dang right. We're gonna go run something.
That's gonna be a wrap for this week's episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us. Whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek just listening along, thank you for walking this trail with us. And we got to say thank you to W Supply for hosting the podcast and supporting everything we do. Be sure to check them out and go to wsupply.com for all your hound hunting needs. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, those leads tight, boots muddy, at the tree.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged, beeping green, boots in the bed and the rifles clean, dog box rattling, engines hum, we're chasing bear till the day is done, old ring barking like he knows what's near, nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale, through mountain mist and paper trails. We see the sunset red in Tennessee, rise through the fog. Chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun. Chasing bear. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track.
Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bears. We're always there, chasing daylight, chasing them bears.